You're listening to The Chain, a science podcast where we bring what is new in biologics and protein engineering to the community of scientists working in this field. We discuss the latest developments with leaders who are on the front lines of cutting-edge research. Hello, 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 and welcome back to The Chain, the podcast that explores the lives, careers, research, and discoveries of protein engineers and scientists, the impact their work is having on the field, and where the industry is headed next. Thanks for joining us for season two. I'm your host, Rory McCann, and I am joined today by Senior Conference Director, Kent Simmons. Kent, how's it going?
It's going good, Rory. Thanks for having us.
In today's episode, Kent interviews two very impressive scientists in protein engineering, Dr. Kate Hastie, who is an instructor at the La Jolla Institute for Immunology, and Dr. Jamie Spangler, who is an assistant professor of biomedical engineering and chemical and biomolecular engineering at Johns Hopkins University. And if that name sounds familiar, she is a two-time Chain guest, and you can hear her interview with Mary Ruberry in episode 9. In addition to being very remarkable and accomplished scientists, Kate and Jamie have a unique connection, which I'll turn it over to you, Kent, to explain what that is.
Oh, sure thing. So every year at the PEGS Boston Conference, for the last 4 years, we've been doing a young scientist keynote presentation that is there to recognize the accomplishments of somebody coming up in the field. And it gives these young scientists the opportunity to share the stage with people like Greg Winter and other luminaries at PEGS. And Kate was actually our young scientist keynote last year, and Jamie will be the young scientist keynote later this year at the 2020 PEGS meeting. And it was interesting when I learned that Jamie would be the keynote for next year. It just struck me how much the two of them were really dedicated to the field of public health and how interesting it might be to have them together to talk about the different perspectives that they share in coming into this field. So it was really a very enjoyable opportunity to talk to them both in the same place at the same time.
That is great. And that is a very unique experience and perspective that they both have. I'm curious, what got you thinking that PEGS was missing a young scientist keynote perspective? I think that's a really cool addition to the program. So I'm just curious what your process was in developing that.
Well, I think when we sit down to identify keynotes for these conferences, there are a lot of very famous people in this space who come to mind when you think about a keynote presentation. But youth coming up in science is also a very important voice broadly to be heard from. And this gave us a process to go out to lab heads in academic and industry science and say, who are your best and brightest? You know, if you want to recommend somebody who belongs on that stage, but maybe we don't know of them yet, who would you recommend? And so this young scientist keynote process has each year spawned 30 or so nominations from the more senior people in the space of young scientists. And it's really been incredibly inspirational to hear from these people at these events the last couple of years.
I think that's great that you put that together. I'm excited to hear your conversation with Kate and Jamie. So without further ado, let's get to it.
Jamie and Kate, I'd like to welcome you to The Chain. It's nice to have you here today.
Good to be here. Thanks for having us, Kent.
So as we've discussed our conversation for today, I think we found that we had a lot to cover, and so we're going to break this into two parts. And in the first part of our conversation, we'll talk a little bit about what each of you do in your labs and the inspirations that led you to this point, and then also talk about the influence of your work on global health. This is, to me, one of the really exciting things about having you both in the conversation at the same time, because you both come at this from very different perspectives. And then in the second part, we'll talk about the challenges in your day-to-day work. I think there's some limitations that come with the complexity of this work. There's also complexities in the systems that you're trying to function in and in the technologies used. So that, I think that'll be really interesting. And then at the end, we'll get into some of your thoughts on how young scientists who might want to break into this field can do that and some of the best practices you might recommend to them. So as a starting point, maybe Jamie, can you tell us a little bit about your work at Johns Hopkins?
Yeah, thanks so much, Kent. So my lab is very interested in taking proteins that exist in nature and reconfiguring them or engineering them in some way, or inspired by natural proteins, creating entirely new ones that nature's never seen before that could be useful from a therapeutic perspective. And in terms of the application and sort of reach of our research, we're interested in a lot of different systems and diseases and problems, both to understand better, you know, sort of the underlying molecular mechanisms dictating human health, and also to understand ways that we can actually intervene to change the way that various systems will respond to certain stimuli in order to create targeted therapies for a variety of different purposes. So our applications really range from things related to the immune system, for example, applications in cancer or autoimmune disease research or infectious diseases research, to initiatives that we have in tissue regeneration, regenerative medicine, to applications that we've been doing in vision research and treating blindness. And so I think you can just kind of see sort of the representative scope, because at the core level, everything involves, to some extent, proteins, right? Which are the building blocks of life. And so I think there's a lot of different directions that we're able to extend our research, all with that underlying theme of molecular engineering.
Mm-hmm. And Kate, tell us a little bit about your work out at La Jolla Institute for Immunology.
So our lab studies viral hemorrhagic fever viruses. The most common people probably have heard of is Ebola virus, which caused thousands of cases of hemorrhagic fever in Western Africa. And I, in particular, study a different hemorrhagic fever virus called Lassa, which is also endemic in the same outbreak area that Ebola was found in a couple years back. And what's really fascinating about these viruses is they're really, really small. So they only make about 4 or 8 different proteins. So we use structural biology to look at what these proteins look like on an atomic level. And then we're able to use this information to develop better vaccines or immunotherapeutics or small molecules that might inhibit viral infection against these viruses.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think we'll probably find in a few minutes how your work comes together, but it's very interesting, the two fields that you're involved with. Jamie, I'm curious, back some years ago when you first became inspired to go into science and biomedical engineering and research, what was your inspiration for doing that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, there's sort of, I think is true in a lot of cases, kind of a number of different factors that sort of inspire you. But I think that the biggest motivation for me was that in all of my science classes throughout, you know, junior high school, high school, I sort of felt like something was missing in terms of kind of a quantitative and design approach, right? We were just always told, like, this is the way that things are, right? In your biology class, you just kind of memorized a lot of different systems and facts, but you didn't really think about it as sort of an engineering design system problem. Mm-hmm. And it really excited me, right, to when I got, actually, I saw it literally on a list of majors when I was sort of looking around at different colleges and opportunities and jobs and careers. And I was like, biomedical engineering, that sounds so exciting, because it combines, you know, my thirst for quantitative and design approaches with the field of medicine and ways that we can actually affect human health and people's lives.
And Kate, what about you? Take us back to your science classes and tell us when you first started thinking about this kind of direction.
So for me, I think it came down to actually a singular class that was about human pathogens. And I remember reading Laurie Garrett's book, The Coming Plague. She talked a lot about these really pathogenic viruses and bacteria like Ebola and Lassa and tuberculosis that just seemed to wreak such havoc on humans throughout history. I was just fascinated, particularly by these viruses that were so incredibly simple. And much like Jamie, it sort of seemed this ripe opportunity to really deeply understand how these viruses use these little molecular machines to do what they do. And exactly as she said, what you learn on your mother's knee in your classes is you get DNA that makes RNA that makes one protein. But we've been able to see with structural biology that actually it's DNA makes RNA that makes a polypeptide sequence that might fold up into three or four more different types of molecules. And this was really just the beginning of our work here in the lab just a few years ago. So it's really driven from a place of wanting to understand how these tiny molecular machines do what they do and how we can harness that to make these better therapeutics.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of The Chain and wanted to let you know about one of my favorite events coming this spring. The 16th annual PEGS conference is taking place May 4th through the 8th in Boston, Massachusetts. PEGS brings together a wide range of programs and topics from diverse perspectives that includes a mixture of industry and academic presentations, all centered around innovation, problem solving, and sharing ideas. You can save $100 on registration with the code POD100. That's POD100. Head over to PEGSUMMIT.com to learn more about PEGS, the Essential Protein Engineering and Cell Therapy Summit.
So as you've described your work, it strikes me that, you know, you could have easily taken your direction in a very basic science kind of manner that led you into a purely academic realm, but you've both ended up in places that have the potential to impact a lot of patients and a lot of aspects of global health. And I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about that perspective in your work, when you think about how your work could be translated into helping patients or helping whole populations. What do you think about and how does that kind of motivate you? Jamie?
Yeah, it's a great point because, you know, as you say, there's so many basic and exciting questions that on the biological level still need to be uncovered. And yet, you know, both of us, I think, have a really strong motivation to try to really have as much impact as we can with the resources and knowledge that we have. And so it's definitely a balance there. But what my lab is very interested in a lot of different ways is really translating therapeutics, and not just in the sense of, okay, taking a molecule that works, going through a bunch of preclinical studies and getting that into potentially a clinical study and ultimately developed as a drug, which again is no small feat, but also really increasing accessibility to these molecules, right? Because even if you create, right, this sort of very kind of niche and unique molecule, the accessibility of that to large parts of the world is going to be very limited. And so it's really understanding not only, you know, how we develop these technologies and therapies to affect people's lives, but also how they'll be distributed and how we can make these in such a manner and such a fashion that will be more accessible to a larger portion of the global population.
And Kate, as I recall, your work involves some travel. So I think your perspective involves a very international kind of view of this. What are your thoughts on how your work will impact global health?
It's really similar to Jamie's. You know, our viruses historically have had either no therapies or sort of off-label therapies. In particular, for Lassa, there's only one single therapy called ribavirin, and it's an off-label use that's been approved, and it's only effective if it's given really early in infection. And in Africa, when you get sick and you go to the hospital, if you can get to the hospital, by the time they've worked out that you've got Lassa or Ebola, it's probably too late for ribavirin because they first test for any number of other African diseases, particularly malaria. And there's no vaccine for Lassa either. So what we're really hoping to do is be able to find these antibodies, develop these vaccines, and really bring it back directly to the people who are most impacted by these diseases. So we do work with a lot of folks who are in Sierra Leone. We have teams that go to the Democratic Republic of the Congo to do serological surveys to find folks who might have antibodies that might be interesting, where we can find them and fine-tune them in La Jolla and then bring them back to these populations and these communities in Africa so that we can really hopefully work towards an effective and long-lasting and broadly applicable therapeutic and vaccine against these viruses.
So each of you have a lot of things going on in your labs, and I'm wondering if could you pick maybe a favorite initiative that you think will bear fruit in the next year and tell us a little bit about that project, Jamie?
Yeah, it's really hard for me to decide because so many exciting things and it's hard to sort of pinpoint. So, but one really exciting thing that I think is very immediately translationally relevant is a project that we're doing that actually combines two different types of proteins. So one is an antibody, which Kate mentioned earlier, which is sort of generally viewed as a targeting protein, although it also obviously recruits a specific immune response in addition to its targeting functions. And the other protein is actually what's called a cytokine, which is an immune factor that basically communicates information between different cells of the immune system by sort of traveling through the body. And what's exciting is that cytokines are really good at activating things very strongly, but they're really bad at being specific. On the other end, antibodies are really good at being specific, but they're not always good at activating. And so what we're doing is we're sort of putting one and one together to make three, to sort of make something that is more powerful than either one independently and kind of overcomes the limitations of each one while harnessing each of their own power. And this particular molecule is going to be used for people with diabetes. And the idea is that it would actually activate your immune system to down-modulate the immune response. So it's kind of, I guess, it's kind of a double negative proves positive type situation where you're activating what are known as regulatory T cells, which actually repress the immune response. So what happens in diabetes is your immune cells are activated to destroy cells that produce insulin, specifically pancreatic islet cells. And the idea here is that you'll create some sort of therapeutic that would specifically protect the cells that are being destroyed by your immune system in diabetes by bringing together these two proteins. So we're actually pretty far advanced already in this project and actually working with a company to further develop this in humanized mouse models. And if that goes well, we envision setting up primate studies, non-human primate studies, and potentially a first in human clinical study within the next year or so.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on that progress. And Kate, tell us about one of your projects for next year.
So like Jamie, it's really hard to decide. So with our move, we recently came to the La Jolla Institute for Immunology from the Scripps Research Institute. And with this move came with that some new cryo-electron microscopy instruments. And for any listeners out there who might be following that field, it's really exploded in the last 5 or 6 years where the type and the amount of information you can get from these instruments is extraordinary. And the second favorite thing that I've got going on now, which is something I'm a little bit more involved in and is near and dear to my heart, is a new antibody discovery platform we have called the Beacon. And what this is going to allow us to do is to find really rare antibodies from survivors of loss in Ebola. So as Jamie mentioned, antibodies are great at targeting specific molecules and specific regions on those molecules. There's lots of different types of Lassa. There's lots of different types of Ebola virus, and not all of them are the same. And the same antibody might not stop all of them equally. So in a place like Africa, it's really important to try to find one molecule that might hit multiple different types of Ebola or multiple different types of Lassa. We're hoping this new antibody discovery platform can help us do that in half the time. So normally it takes somewhere in the range of maybe 4 to 6 weeks just to get the cells from in a state that you can study them. What this platform will let us do is not only identify particular cells from a human survivor that might react against one protein, but to actually identify cells that are making antibodies that react against multiple different types of proteins, as well as block the virus. And we'll be able to do this in one day instead of 4 or 6 or 8 weeks, which is really, really exciting. And we've just started to implement some of these experiments. So I hope in the next year, we'll find that needle in the haystack from someone.
Well, I think that's a perfect segue for us to end the first part of this podcast. I think we're going to talk in the second part about some of the challenges in your work, and particularly about things that might be rate limiting steps in your work, and then also how some new technologies have helped you with those. And I'm guessing that your answer to that question of those steps might have been different a year ago before you had the Beacon and before you had cryo-EM as tools. So we'll look forward to exploring that in part two. And I'd like to thank you both for joining us here today on The Chain.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, Kent.
Thank you for joining us on The Chain. Tune in next time for more conversations about science, research, and exploring the world of protein engineering.